Welcome to The Pet Show with Jimmy Jelinek and Dennis Quaid.
Our guest today on The Pet Show is Elias Weiss Friedman, better known the world over as The Doggist. To those unfamiliar with his moniker and origin story, it reads something like a millennial dream. In 2013, after being laid off from a corporate job and brand strategy, Friedman, then a frustrated photographer, dusted off his Nikon and began skulking the streets of New York City, looking for a subject to capture. After some false starts, he began noticing that his pictures on Instagram that featured dogs were seeing massive engagement from his friends and family. It was then that the light bulb appeared. A fan of street photography pages like The Sartorialist, which offered a subtle and nuanced take on fashion and style featuring everyday people, he realized, with some detached irony and semblance of humor, that there was nothing like this out there for dogs. Thus, The Doggist was born. Combining the street style sensibility of The Sartorialist with the storytelling pathos of the humans of New York. Today, Friedman is nearly as famous as the dogs he photographs, a familiar face in the dog parks and canine-friendly haunts of Manhattan and Brooklyn. He downplays his success with an uncharacteristic modesty and deadpan wit, readily acknowledging the ridiculousness of the entire endeavor. Nonetheless, he's extremely good at what he does, which he says with all seriousness is due to the fact that he's part dog himself. And with nearly 4 million followers on the Doggist page, he might just be right. In 2015, Friedman released a book entitled The Doggist, Photographic Encounters with 1,000 Dogs. The book was featured on the New York Times bestseller list. In 2017, Friedman released another book entitled The Doggist Puppies. This, coupled with a full line of clothing and dog-related merchandise, as well as a side business offering dog portraiture to select clients, as well as work for brands like Purina, has The Doggist poised to become a fully-fledged canine empire. Friedman spoke to us from his New York City home, having just returned from a two-month hiatus in Massachusetts where he was quarantined. He spoke to us in what was a sweltering New York City Wednesday, in what most New Yorkers who've ever been trapped in the city in August know as the dog days of summer. But the Doggist stops for no man, heat, humidity, weather, and pandemic included. So without further ado, Elias Weiss Friedman, welcome to The Pet Show.
I just want to get some background first on, you know, I'm sure you've gone over your origin story a million times, but if you can bear with me and do it for me as well. The idea for The Doggist came from you sensing an opportunity to create something similar to The Sartorialist for dogs, right? You were in Vienna, you had just been laid off, and you woke up in the middle of the night after sensing engagement, after seeing engagement of a photo you took on a boxer. Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's something I've been doing my whole life in some ways. You know, I've always been a doggist. I had a dark room in the house, and I had Labrador retrievers, and I was into cameras, but this was, you know, before social media. So it was not like I could see how it would turn into a career. But then the, you know, fortunate series of events, or I don't know if you'd call getting fired fortunate, but in retrospect it was.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was just like, had this epiphany moment where I saw this great project that no one was doing, at least the way I thought it could be done. And I just started it, and the rest is history kind of thing, you know, like 40,000 dogs later.
You know, for people who aren't, you know, I lived in New York for 17 years, but for people who aren't New Yorkers and don't understand The Sartorialist, you know, there is a very New York essence about the dogs that you photograph. What is it that is being communicated? You know, like, what makes a dog New York, you know, in that Sartorialist sense of the word, in terms of how you're curating these dog pictures for a very, you know, special look and feel?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we talk about a lot, is that, you know, the Doggist is almost just as much New York as it is dogs. And there's just sort of this, like, special texture of New York that comes through in the images, whether it's the background or the person's outfit. And, you know, the quote that they give me is often, like, very, like, pithy and interesting. And then there's a diversity of dogs that you don't really get in other cities or any, you know, other places around the world. So there's just sort of this, you know, there's this New York special combination of factors that sort of, you know, add this something special to it. And, you know, people around the world are all fascinated with New York and what's happening there. Most people have never been. So to see this sort of like on the streets view of dogs, which are, you know, dogs is already a great winning concept. It's even more compelling, the fact that there's like this New York aspect.
A lot of people don't realize what a dog city New York is, because you don't think of it as a dog city because there's not open space. People live in small apartments. But when you go there, I live in LA, which is dog, it's dog insane here, but it's different as well. I mean, there's a very organized, big dog community, you know, within, you know, there is the dog park world,
right?
The dog walkers
and,
themselves.
And they're like passengers in the cars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've shot in LA a bit. And it's certainly a strong dog community, but it's not a walking city. So as a street photographer, you know, I'm going to like parks and, you know, Runyon Canyon and the beach and, you know, figuring out like, oh, you know, sort of planning my encounters a little bit more. Whereas there's like, as I was saying, in New York, there's sort of this spontaneity that is special.
Each photo is really a quest to capture or communicate the soul or essence of the dog itself. Do you find, though, that often that the identity of the dog is intrinsically linked with its human?
There's definitely a link there. There's definitely an energy that they share. If the person is kind of confident and like outgoing, then oftentimes the dog has that energy as well. If the person's kind of like shy, then you'd see that in the dog too. My interactions with people are, you know, about 5 minutes. So I definitely get a good sense, but I sort of get the dog at its peak excitement because I'm like a stranger. There's like the novelty to me. Like I have treats. I have squeaky toys.
You're someone new to smell and jump on. I mean, you're like,
it's like
Christmas every day for the.
I know. Yeah. I'm like interested in the dog, and I have a way of, you know, like speak dog, so to say.
You know, I read in it, you say you speak dog, I read an interview about you in The Guardian that says that you can imitate three different kinds of dog barks very accurately.
Yeah, where are they? You know, you have like the regular dog bark, like, whoop, whoop, whoop. And I'm good. My co-host Elsa here is
beautiful.
My husky. And then there's sort of like the hound bark, which is whoop, 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 whoop. I don't know if that's a hound bark. That's just like a series of barks. And then the hound thing is more of a baying, where they are like, woo, woo. So that's three. And there's the small dogs, yappy.
Yappy dogs. So you're a big. I mean, you shoot dogs of all shapes and sizes, but you yourself have a big dog. Is that your?
Well, actually, she's a medium size.
Oh, okay,
she's like she's 35 pounds. I've had her for like 3 months now. I got her in the midst of the quarantine. She's like a forever puppy. Everyone thinks she's like 6 months old. She's like a husky mix. The vet thinks she might be a shebusky, like a Shiba Inu and a husky.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's I rescued her from Texas. She came up. I was in Massachusetts and I got set up with her and foster failed her, so to say.
Okay. Do you take her out with you, or is that too hard to mix her with the other? Does that open up?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons it took me a while to get a dog, was because I'm like, how can I like go out and get the dog's attention if I'm trying to be a dog myself?
Yeah.
And if there's an actual dog, then I have no competition for that. So I was a little apprehensive about shooting with her. I started doing it, and it's actually not. I kind of will position her as I would the tennis ball in a way. Like, I'll bring her close, and now the dog's looking at Elsa, and I'm kind of, my camera's right next to her face.
So it's like an eyeline trick versus like an introduction.
Yeah, but it's definitely more of a challenge. And if I'm really going to do like a full bunch of hours shooting around the city, then Elsa can stay at home or be with someone.
Right. Do you, when you say you're trying to be a dog, what are you doing with yourself? And, I mean, obviously you're not like barking and getting down on all fours. You know, you're
right.
No, it's being a dog. It's not a, but what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that I am a dog. It's just that I'm trying to, like I said, speak dog and make noises and sort of engage them. Like I'm also, you know, for the last bunch of years, I've always used knee pads so that I'm literally crouching on the ground on the dog's level and making like noises as if I'm an animal. And then that sort of, that really gets their attention. And there's that, I'm looking for that moment of attention because the signature of all my images is this sort of eye contact.
Yeah.
Direct eye contact. It's subtly different from most other dog photographers because we anthropomorphize our dogs anyway, right?
Yeah.
And if it feels in the image like they know that they're having their picture taken like a person would, then that plays into our like humor and fantasy of the dogs being people even more.
So are you trying to capture that? Are you trying to walk a line and stay away from that while still capturing eye contact and being candid?
No, I think I definitely want that sort of break the fourth wall type of thing, you know, where, and in a way, the whole thing from the beginning is a little bit of a joke, right? Like where I'm, when I started it, it was kind of, you know, like, oh, wouldn't it be funny to do the Sartorialist for dogs?
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah. So you're doing, like, you're talking about their fashion sense and their,
yeah, mocking the vanity of Instagram, right? Where everyone has like a channel and like, here's me. So, and you know that dogs don't do that, right? They don't have that ability. Yeah. They can't conceive of like an ego or whatever.
Yeah, they don't have a sense of self to know, like, here I am, world, love
me. Right, they're free of that. They're not burdened with that. One of my things is that I make it feel like they do have that for a moment, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And that's basically achieved through that direct eye contact. You know, like a lot of dog photographers will post images where the dog is like looking a little off. Like you can tell they're looking at the person, not the camera.
Yeah.
And it would be like you're
more about, and with a lot of them, especially with those pet influencers, it becomes about the setup and the costume and the,
and the person themselves. You know, if you're having a lunch with someone and they're looking like just like at your forehead or something, you'd be like, what's going on? You know what I mean? It would be so disconcerting. And that makes all the difference. So the fact that it feels like that they know they're having their picture taken is sort of a special thing. And then, so that's how it sort of got traction back in 2013. It was like the Sartorialist for dogs or Humans of New York for dogs. And then I started doing stories more inspired by Humans of New York about a year or two into it. Instead of just like having interactions with the dog, I was saying, so what's he like? Like any funny stories about him? And just getting the owner's perspective or two cents on what the dog is like,
which is brilliant because the idea of the naked city and, you know, 6 million stories, you know, everybody has a story about their dog and everybody's dog is special. So
and you know, it's not like every story is so unique, but like the little nuances of it, like the type of shoe they chewed up and, you know, where they ran away or like, you know, the all those little, and the way they say it is all people identify with that and it makes it unique and fun.
On that tip, there's that old cliche about how people start to look like their dogs after a while. You know, having shot 40,000 dogs, do you find that so much, especially in New York with the those kind of like, oh, hello type people? Like, do you find a group of people that start looking like their dogs?
Yeah, well, you know, I started doing that myself. Like Elsa, she's like white and tan. So then I'm wearing like white shoes now, white shirt, tan pants. I don't know if it's subconscious, but yeah, I would say in general, when you see it, you know it when you see it. The person who's like dressed eccentrically and has curly hair with the labradoodle.
I'm not talking about the like super try hard like twinning where people are dressing themselves like dogs and the whole
like
hype
dog fashionistas, yeah,
but like real New Yorkers like you're talking about, carrying the tuna sandwich, curly hair, the dog has curly hair.
Right, now there's definitely a look, the dog factors into that for sure. You know, everyone is so particular often on like the breed and like the aesthetic of the dog and like what kind of dog is like my vibe. And so that you start off the whole dog experience probably with that. You're not just ending up with, you know, you have a preference.
Yeah.
It all kind of oftentimes does come together into this sort of like this vibe. You know what I mean?
I also love the strange juxtaposition that you see in New York. And maybe this is more recent, of like really huge gangster looking guys with tiny little teacup dogs.
Yeah. In my experience in New York, I haven't seen that as much.
Maybe that's an LA thing.
I feel like those guys might be more LA-ish.
yeah. And that's all that, you know, like their dog has the Supreme dog vest on. You know, that's getting...
Yeah.
They've got that whole thing going.
Yeah. New York, I would say, you know, look is a little more, you know, street style, hipstery. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Less considered, but still put together.
Yeah, there's more subtle thoughts and nuances to it than sort of this funny juxtaposition. But sometimes that happens too. You get everything.
Yeah. So the ride, you know, back to this, like, we do a lot of coverage of pet influencers and celebrity dogs or whatever, and the rise of this sort of past few years, it's gone from something that was pretty fun and cute to like this sort of industrial economy of pet influencers. And it's been swift and massive. And it's sort of morphed now into this sort of like soulless influencer business where the dogs are full-fledged lucrative brands unto themselves. How do you walk the line with the doggist where you're still making money as a business?
Right.
But you're not becoming that.
The celebrity dog idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, you know, still sort of the only person that does what I do, which is essentially like Humes of New York for Dogs, of, you know, where I'm a photographer, traveling, having impromptu interactions with dogs, and every dog gets one post, and there's this inherent novelty and documentary aspect to it. Whereas sort of an influencer, blogger, like, and I'm also behind the camera most of the time.
Right.
I'm not in it for my, you know, I'm not.
No, but I mean, not personally, but how are you avoid, like, those people must be all over you to shoot their dogs and to feature their dogs. Like, is that?
Yeah.
Are you being bombarded with that all the time?
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants their dog to be famous. You know, they want to be in the club, so to say. It's a bit silly, obviously.
Yeah.
That's part of the fun that I, you know.
Yeah, there's an irony to that, because that's very New York too, in the sense that, you know, the idea of exclusivity, and that you have created an exclusive space for dogs. Like, you have achieved the idea of the Satori.
Right. And that all sort of plays into this sort of subtle tongue-in-cheek juxtaposition thing, where it's like the dogs don't care about being famous, you know, but the person does.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Like I said, there's this sort of undercurrent of like mockery and irony, and like I'm a factor in that too. Like I'm sort of the Batman, or like the person who's like taking this so seriously, and yet this is all about dogs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, and
I know what
here's
you mean.
This like here's this sort of like serious, shallow, depth of field focused picture, and the caption is like, he like eats poop or whatever, you know, like it's like everyone's trying so hard, all the people are trying so hard, and the dogs like ruin it every time. But you can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like the dog,
and it's
like,
perfect.
The dog will let you down because it's a dog.
Right. So yeah, that's one of my favorite things about it, and that's sort of what makes it fun and different from, you know, if you have one dog and you're sort of documenting your travels, then that sort of fits within the more normal, the more common sort of influencer.
I
follow my story. A lot of them are like interesting, awesome stories, but I guess you have to be into that specific story, whereas the dog is this kind of has everything.
You get fatigue of the person, and you know you're introducing people to, yeah, there is that, you know, there's that journalistic aspect of chronicling the everyday lives of New York dogs.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing is that the doggist, you know, a lot of it can be light, obviously, but sometimes it gets spicy, and people, it sort of catches people off guard when I'm posting something that's like, has some grit to it, is a little, you know, a little too real.
What does that mean, you know, in terms of grit and spiciness? Can you give me an example?
You know, if I'm posting a week or so and it's, you know, golden retrievers and a puppy here, blah, 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 and people get a little bit lulled into this sort of like good news, you know, this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this last Sunday I posted a story about actually my cousin's dog. We went to a dog park and it got attacked. And then I had to remove the dog from the puppy, and, you know, the dog was almost killed. And then so the discussion became, well, how do you, what's the right way to break up a dog fight? And like,
yeah.
And who's responsible, and like, whose fault was it that the puppy was in the dog park? And so that everyone, all the people come out with it, with, and it's all the passion that people have for in the dog community. Just that's sort of the moment when you realize that the dog has these profound moments that are a little bit more controversial than your average.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find, and you don't have to name them by person, because do you see patterns in your commenters? Like, are there people who think that they have a relationship with you or the doggist based on them being frequent commenters in your posts, and then there becomes that comment bullying? Like, you see it a lot where there's like a, where you see like fights breaking out in the comment section between people.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see that. I can see that happening a lot within your world.
Everyone has an expectation of other people and certain brands. If some people are new to the doggist, then they, you know, what they saw in the last month was sort of a little bit lighter. And then I just happened, you know, upon a story that I thought was interesting. Maybe, and it's not that I condone every story either.
Yeah.
Some of them I find are interesting, and maybe instead of just like discarding it, I'm gonna like share it and have people discuss, and like everyone's gonna learn something. When you do that, and I've done that countless times, you know that it's gonna be a little stressful for me and for people who are expecting, they were offended, I guess, in some way. Maybe.
Do you have a team to police it so it doesn't get out of hand?
Our team is now 4. And ultimately, unless it's like particularly, thing, then I'm basically just running with, you know, I know what I'm doing at this point, you know?
Right, right.
And sometimes I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Or I wasn't expecting, you know, I was in New York during the Black Lives Matter movement protests. I went to some of them and photographed some dogs that were there. Instead of sort of talking about the point of it was like, I want to highlight this thing that's happening. But the comments sort of went into like, dogs shouldn't be at protests because they're dangerous. That's a discussion, right? And there's some truth to some of it. And when I was there, it didn't seem very like a fine place for a dog to be.
Right.
I can imagine that there are some situations that happen that you wouldn't want a dog, and I wouldn't be there photographing dogs in that situation, you know?
But that's interesting. So, that is the point that gets harped on, you know, while you're... It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting who jumps on what. The caddist
is
remarkably smaller, despite the popularity of cats online. Is it because they aren't out and about to suit your candid model? I mean, like, other than bodega cats,
right?
You have to be invited inside someone's home to.
Yeah, exactly. Cat. Yeah, no, it's a different model. But I, you know, when I started the doggist, the caddist started on the same day. I was like, all right, doggist, let's do the caddist too, just in case. Cause I, you know, it's a good name and it's related and people love cats. I've never had a cat, but
I don't seem like a cat person really.
Yeah. I'm part dog and, you know, I'm entertained by the idea of maybe having a cat at some point with dogs, but that hasn't happened yet. But yeah, in terms of finding them, they don't walk around on the streets, not regularly.
If they do, they're dangerous street cats that you don't want to.
Right. Mess. Yeah, you don't want to mess with them. and the idea of, like I said, going chasing people's cats under their furniture in their apartment is not my idea of a fun time either. And also, cats aren't as generous with eye contact, I think.
Right, right.
So the images, mind you, like when I go do shelter shoots for dogs, I'll sometimes do cat section too. And I do get them to look at me. You know, you're making a weird noise, and the cat's like, what?
What's the trick to getting a cat to make eye contact with you?
It's kind of a weird noise, like a. She else is now. She's reacting too.
And then they'll track you.
Yeah. Well, they'll just like be like, what's that? And that's when I take 10 frames. You know.
Right.
And then they might be like, oh, and then may not work again. You know, I take a lot of bad pictures. you know, there's a lot of pictures that are kind of like close.
Of course, of course.
And but I only share the ones that are, I feel are good.
Let's assess certain breeds, or at least break them down. You've called Afghans the supermodels of the dog world. What does that mean? What's their vibe? And then do you have any other categories for dogs that you shoot?
It's rare that you see an Afghan on the street because they're a rare breed, and I'm sure they're, you know, they have their own unique personality, and the upkeep of their coat is a whole thing. You know, it's expensive, I'm sure.
Yeah, the shampoos and the combing.
If you're into Afghans, and you know, a lot of it has to do with the show world too. Like, I don't know if you've seen Best in Show, the movie, but
I have. I've been to the actual thing.
Westminster.
When we lived in New York, my wife and I would go to Westminster and just like sit in the bleachers and eat hot dogs and cheer for the
Yeah. Dog. Well, I've talked to, I remember I was having this conversation with a Cardigan Welsh Corgi handler.
Okay.
And this guy, he's won the show twice, like back in like the 90s or something. He's been, you know, these guys are just like so, in their whole life is dogs.
Oh yeah.
And I was talking to him about like, what's the difference between Cardigan Welsh Corgis and Pembroke Welsh Corgis? And it's like, to the, you know, layperson, it's like, oh, well, one, you know, they look a little different. The reality is that, like, you know, Pembrokes come from money. Like, there's a lot of money in Pembrokes. Queen of England has corgis.
Right, right.
Whereas the Cardigans are kind of like this farm dog. And so you see that, basically, he was saying that, like, Best in Show is a documentary, not a mockumentary.
Yeah, no.
Like, all those stereotypes of, like, what kind of people show which dogs, and, you know, the poodle people and the Afghan people and the Shih Tzu people and the terrier people, like, there is sort of this.
Have you been backstage in the prep area of Westminster?
It's, yeah, the benching area. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it stinks because they have to express their anal glands to get
right,
so they don't do anything nasty.
It does smell doggy.
Have you ever dealt with anybody in the extreme grooming world? You know, when they take the poodles and they turn them into like...
I know, yeah. That is really a sight to see at the dog shows, is the way that they finesse the poodle butts, you know, like the poofs and the haircuts. And there's all types of things that are like secrets of the trade. Dyeing the dog's hair and baby powder. There's an art to it, obviously. You know, I remember I was helping a writer of the New York Times write a piece about how to get your dog famous on Instagram. And I said something about, like, when I post poodles, like, they don't always perform as well because there's sort of this perception of them as this sort of haughtiness.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a little bit of a... And that is just, you know, created because the way that they're sort of seen in the haircuts and and the owners... You know, I love poodles. We had a poodle growing up, and they're amazing.
They're remarkably
dogs.
Smart dogs, but yeah, they're that they are like elitist.
Yeah, they just have that little air about them. The poodle community was incensed with my comment, and I got some heat for that. I was like, no, you don't get it. That's not what I meant.
This time last year, you were in Israel shooting.
Yeah.
How does dog culture differ on the streets of Tel Aviv or Jerusalem? First, New York.
Yeah, well, the dog community there is awesome. People love their dogs. There is a New Yorkness about Tel Aviv. I would say Tel Aviv is like a New York meets Miami
kind of
vibe. So I would say it's similar to what I experienced to New York a little bit. They're definitely the mixed breeds, the mutts that they have there have a look to them. You know, they have a lot of huskies and, you know, there's just sort of like some sub-trends, and it's hard to really describe it. And, you know, they have all the breeds that are popular as well.
Then you have all the Middle East street dogs, too. You don't have that thick world, the strays with mange that you
right.
know in New York.
I didn't see that in Tel Aviv, but, you know, I shot in Puerto Rico, and there's definitely a...
Oh, yeah, that's the whole thing.
There's definitely a lot of stray pets down there, a lot of stray dogs down there.
Yeah, I interviewed Rob Thomas on Friday, the guy from Matchbox 20, who's got a foundation called Sidewalk Angels. And part of what they do is rescue those beach dogs from Puerto Rico and find them homes. And I had no idea that was a whole thing. Like,
yeah, my brother did that. He's a dog influencer. We did like this rescue ride
okay.
where we got a dog from Puerto Rico and you know, had some sponsors, you know, BMW gave us a car, and we drove across the country with Finn, who the internet named him. It was like a whole bracket
wait,
to name
wait,
him.
Wait, back up. BMW gave you money to drive across Puerto Rico.
They gave us a car, yeah.
So BMW gave you a car to drive across Puerto Rico to rescue street dogs.
Oh, no, sorry, no. So the dog was from Puerto Rico and was rescued by the Sato Project, flown to New York. And the plan was that we would drive around the country, the U.S., visiting shelters, promoting each shelter, and documenting Finn's journey, his welcome tour to the U.S.,
wow.
And then find him an adoptive family in L.A., right? That was sort of the arc of the plan. And I invited my brother to come along with me. He had, like, you know, quit his job and had been living in a Sprinter van, and was living in it. You know, he was sort of...
He was doing the van life thing.
The van life thing. But, you know, it wasn't really clear where he was going. Anyway, we do this whole thing, and it was very fun. And obviously, when you have a puppy, you know, you fall in love with the dog. And, you know, my brother was, like, all set up to have a dog. We reached sort of this point of no return where, you know, we were in Red Rock, you know, near the Grand Canyon. It's like, Henry, like, now you have to decide, like, are we going to L.A. or are we turning around? And then one morning he's like, all right, I'm keeping the dog. And we turned around.
And the sponsor thought, and was the, did the brand, did they get upset? You're like, no, you're supposed to give that dog away.
No, they weren't upset about that. Although dropping the car in Arizona instead of L.A. was a little bit of a...
Right.
Yeah.
Your hunting grounds seem to be like below 14th Street to the Battery, you know, the sort of downtown playground of young affluent New York. How do people's relationships to their dogs change as you change neighborhoods? How do the dogs and your portraits of them in, say, the South Bronx or East New York differ from what you would shoot in Gramercy or Soho?
Yeah, I mean, there are some trends. Like, if you're in, like, Brooklyn, you're more likely to see the owner with their dog, like, during a weekday, I would say. Whereas in more, like, you know, the Upper East Side, for example, you see, like, walkers with, like, 10 dogs, and they're all, like, you know, expensive-looking dogs. And then, I don't know, and oftentimes you'll see, you know, around Central Park, Uptown, that, like, there's, like, two Golden Doodles. Not one, but two. You know, they have a big apartment, and they, why not get two dogs?
I guess, is dog culture more... a product of affluence, because you can afford to pamper the dog and you can afford to bring it out? Or
I would say that, I mean, there's definitely a relationship between, you know, dogs are not cheap. They're luxuries. You don't have to have a dog. It's a great thing, but you're caring for another animal. So then if you start there and then you say, oh, well, I want this very specific breed that costs $4,000, then everything, you know, trickles down from there. And then you're getting, you know, your veterinarian is even more expensive, and the food you get is even more expensive, and all the grooming and yada yada. So dogs aren't cheap. They're like kids in a way.
Right. How has COVID changed your ability to operate? I mean, obviously people are going to be more weary of being approached by a stranger, but on the other side, there must be more people out and about with their dogs because they're not at work.
Yeah, that's true. I dipped out of New York for 2 months, and I was in Massachusetts, so, you know, I lost access to dogs. That's when we looked into getting a dog. So that was a great thing that came out of the whole experience. But, you know, for a while, you're like, what do we do? And, like, I looked at Brandon Stanton, the Humans of New York, is doing, and he started doing virtual interviews,
right,
with people. So I basically started doing that and basically allowing user-submitted pictures. And then I would jump on the phone with them for a bit and just get a little snippet as if I were meeting them on the street. And we focused on frontline workers and in the healthcare system. So it was actually really amazing and powerful seeing, you know, highlighting at a really important time, you know, these nurses and doctors and everyone else, you know, who are going through such a stressful time.
And obviously they all have pets and they must have unique and...
Yeah, and highlighting that relationship and how important the pet is to them when they get home was really inspiring.
What is that relationship to their pet like often? I mean, obviously it's going to differ from person to person, but it must be a unique relationship because they're away from their pet a lot. So when they get home, the reunion must be pretty powerful every day.
Yeah. And these guys are, you know, it's like they're going to battle and they're seeing people die. You know, everyone's human and to have a pet, a dog that you can come home to and just sort of like the dog isn't thinking about what you're thinking about, and you can assert your, it lowers your cortisol levels and your blood pressure, and you can just sort of forget about, you can relax a bit, and that's so important. And so that was a cool opportunity to like highlight that. And you know, I wouldn't have maybe had that sort of story theme happen if it weren't for COVID. So you know, obviously it's stressful for a lot of brands and businesses, but the disruption is also good, especially for me as a creator, to sort of like shake things up and like,
yeah.
So we started this thing called the Dogest Olympics because, you know, all sports were canceled, but like, you know, they can't cancel like dogs or like, you know, what dogs do, and everyone's at home with their dogs. So we started doing like theme, like, you know, dogs cooling off in the pool or catching cookies or something. And then everyone would submit on Instagram stories, and then we would repost them and people would vote gold or silver on the polls.
I like watching dogs on treadmills. That's like,
maybe that's the next Dogest Olympics.
You know, once I get the hang of it. I'm particularly interested in your dog portrait studio, that the whole business around that like I can get my own Dogest portrait of. Has that taken off for you? And you must get some pretty like intense requests in terms of people wanting, you know, amazing portraiture of their dogs.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new thing for me, you know, like it's a transition from street photography where, you know, it's not very technical, you know, right, the camera, I have my whole thing. Whereas in the studio, you control it's all about controlling every little aspect and creating the light. And so we have a bunch of people that are coming in, and it's something I'm sort of learning and we're getting started onto. It's fun, you know, it's instead of having like 5 minutes with a dog on the street, I now have an hour, and I'm learning how a dog reacts differently in a studio. I'm finding new angles.
Are you still starting from your signature aspect of eye contact and then building around that?
It starts with that for sure. The thing that really is different about it is the people that I now want to include the person and their face.
Right.
And have them both sit for a portrait. And it's really like a dual portrait. I don't know if that's the right term. So that's cool too. And in me learning how to direct people, you know, it's harder to obviously take a picture of a person, in my opinion, because they'll look at it and say, oh, my nose looks big or something, or like, you know, anything. I don't like that one. Whereas the dog, it doesn't, will never do that. And the funnier you make them look, the better it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a new challenge for me. And obviously with COVID coinciding right when we launched it, you know, it's a new challenge to sort of get people inside with someone else. But you know, we're doing the masks, and you know, I have a couple shoots next week, so yeah, it's cool. And you know, it's an opportunity for people who, you know, haven't met me and are big fans and want me to capture their dog to sort of arrange for that to happen instead of like, I don't really do that on the streets, you know, the sort of the artistic, you know, integrity of what I do is,
you know, I'm interested in how people build their businesses and, you know, just the entrepreneurial aspect of what you're doing. There's now a CEO of the Dogest. There's obviously the book. You have your publishing arm. You work for brands outside.
Yeah.
I'm always interested to see in how people build.
Yeah, I mean we're trying to grow, you know, as a startup. You know, for a while it was just like my project, right?
Yeah.
And over time, the Dogest becomes a brand, right? And it means something, and you have to evolve what you're doing, or else you're gonna become antiquated, I guess, or irrelevant. But not that dogs will ever be irrelevant, but you got to keep changing what you're doing a little bit.
But dogs are used within the context of commerce and commercially, and you know,
And what does it mean to be like a Dogest like fan and to be a dog person? Really, we came out with a bunch of like clothing and outfits. Like I wear this every day now. Like my little, instead of like a polo shirt,
your merch.
It's a little Dogest. And there are not that many like brands out there that are like sort of have this dog theme that are popular. You know, there's like the Black Dog Cafe in Martha's Vineyard, and people wear that. That means something. That's like has a real strong dog brand, in my opinion. That's sort of something I think that we're definitely interested in, because it's another thing that doesn't really exist. How do you like say people that you're a dog person without being cheesy?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like saying like, you know, so obviously like having like a dog mom or dog dad shirt is like kind of fun, but for like a more subtle like New York streetwear minimalist vibe, like that's what something that we are interested in, and yeah, part of the Doggist brand.
That's all the time we have today with the Doggist. We hope you enjoyed the interview. And if you haven't already done so, check out and follow them on Instagram at the Doggist. And make sure if you like the Pet Show to check us out as well on Instagram at the Pet Show Podcast. And please, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars. It makes a huge difference. The Pet Show is brought to you by Audio Up Media and is written, produced, and co-hosted by me, Jimmy Jelinek, with Dennis Quaid. Executive producers are Jared Gustat and Dennis Quaid. Our editor is Bill Markt, our story producer is Emma Rapold, and our head of production is Tyler Dorson. We'll talk to you next week.